Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Nubology podcast. I hope that you are cozy, that you are comfortable, that you are relaxed. We are joined by South Africa's favorite gamer girl, Sam Tekgold-Wright. And yeah, let's get into the episode.
Sam, thank you so much for joining us. We are truly honored and privileged to have your time. You are our South Africa's Wonder Woman, as I like to call you. But for those of us and our listeners who aren't aware of Tech Girl, can you tell us a little bit about you?
I'm just going to steal that and say, I'm Wonder Woman now. The gig is up. No, I am a esports shoutcaster. That's my primary job, if you like. But I'm also a content creator. So I do content on, I have a blog, on a YouTube channel, across social media. And then I'm a freelance writer for Red Bull Gaming and a few other places. And I also do a gaming segment on 5FM once a week, every Thursday night, called Hot Drop.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Did you come up with the name yourself, or was it a team of Battle Royale producers that we don't know about at 5FM?
No, Hot Drop was my idea. And it was kind of funny because I do the show with an incredible DJ called Justin Soren. And I said to him, I think I want to call it Hot Drop. And he came back and he was like, what's a Hot Drop? So I had to explain to him what a Hot Drop was. And then he was like, no, I love it. And I was like, yes. And then I felt a bit bad because I realized that the reason Hot Drop was in my head was because a friend of mine who I worked with on Overwatch Contenders, his name is Trid, he had just started working at a gaming marketing agency and they'd called themselves Hot Drop and they'd done their big launch the week before. And I thought at the time I was so clever, and then I realized the reason you thought of that is because that was in your mind because you had seen the tweets about this. But I'm just going to run with it. It's Hot Drop. But no, unfortunately, there are some Battle Royale players at 5FM, but I get to claim that one. That was my idea for the name.
The cool thing about the show is that we get to ask people about their origin story. Now, I would love to dive into the origins of Tech Girl. Can you tell us about that?
So Tech Girl is really the blog, because that wasn't really the name I went with. And I for a long time before the Tech Girl, the blog as we know it, existed, I was a huge fan of writing. I studied journalism at school, at university, and I'd taken quite a cushy office job because journalism doesn't pay the bills. It's probably the best career in order to tell the stories that you want to tell, but it unfortunately doesn't pay the bills as well. So I'd taken this cushy office job, but it was actually in the engineering and mining sector. So I was surrounded by stuffy suits all day, really. And I was getting, I suppose, bored. I don't think it's bored. I mean, I obviously worked really hard, but I was frustrated. I didn't have a creative outlet. And I'd had this blog which I've since deleted, thank goodness, where I used to share my embarrassing dating stories on. And then started kind of once in a while, it was at the time when like smartphones really came into being and people were starting to pay attention. And I started sharing my opinions on them. And then a couple of my friends said, you know what, this is like really fun. I still remember, I think the one article that kind of was the reason Tech Girl now exists was this ridiculous piece of content I did called the smartphone bum test. And what I did is I took a bunch of smartphones at that stage that were way too big. Ironically, now there's bigger smartphones out there, but I thought they were too big. And I try to fit them in the pockets of my skinny jeans. And I took photos and discussed which ones were the easiest if you didn't want to carry a handbag to plunk in your pockets. And after that, some of my friends, we were all sitting together and they said, you know, I really enjoy this. I love reading this. It makes me laugh, but I do actually learn something from it. You should start something, a website or something where you can put this stuff up. And I thought it was a little bit of a joke, but the seed was there. And after a while I thought, well, you know, it'll be something fun. You know, I can build this website. I can write these stories. It'll be entertaining. And I then proceeded to begin coming up with the idea of Tech Girl. And what happened after that was I desperately needed a name for the blog, and all the names that I wanted, the domains were taken. And eventually a friend of mine phoned and she said, why don't you go with Tech Girl? I've checked the domains free. And I still will never forget in that phone call, my first reaction without pause was, it's a horrible name. I hate it. And then like 4 hours later, still couldn't get the names that I wanted. And just kind of, I'm one of those, I just like to get things done. So instead of trying to figure out if there was a way to get a better name, I just bought the domain and that was it. It was Tech Girl. And that was kind of where it came from.
I'm sure by now it must have grown on you.
No, I still hate it. I really don't like it, but it is what it is. I mean, in the beginning, I never really... It's an interesting one because when I started that blog, I never really saw it as me per se. I kind of thought it was a website that was, and I still remember at that stage, I had a personal Twitter account, a personal Instagram account. And then I sort of built Tech Girl, and Tech Girl had its own Twitter accounts and Instagram accounts. And it was meant to be completely separate. So kind of like, I suppose, an entertainment site or whatever, where there wasn't really a face to it. But then over time, it became kind of apparent that, you know, people were starting to, they would write in the comments and they'd ask me questions, and they were tagging the tech or social media, but specifically to engage with me. And I think over time you start realizing that actually they're not coming here, they're coming to the blog, but they're coming to the blog because they want to be part of a community with you. Mm-hmm. And there needs to actually be a face here. For a long time, there wasn't a face. You know, we didn't put, yeah. I didn't put my face up or anything. And then after a while realized, unfortunately, it's going to have to be me. And that was when my face started coming out. And then I just shut down the personal Twitter and Instagram account because I was never using it. I was always on the other two answering questions and things. And so, unfortunately, I suppose Tickle swallowed me up, and then it became a thing, and that was it.
Hmm. Was it scary starting off Tickle?
It was. I think in the beginning, it wasn't scary to start Tickle because I wasn't really going to put my face on it. I had a day job. I didn't see Tickle. And I think this is the difference now, is if someone's starting a platform now or getting on the internet, it's like a big thing and everyone's on the internet. When I started that blog, which was, I'd say, about sort of 5 years ago, Twitter wasn't even really a thing. There were a couple of cool people, but you kind of name everyone in Joburg who had Twitter. There wasn't this thing that we have now where being on the internet was a scary thing. So it didn't really matter. I mean, I wasn't worried about my boss seeing it. I wasn't worried about brands seeing it. Like, it was just a thing that I was doing for fun, you know, I could kind of reach out and chat to people who had similar interests. So no, I wasn't scared when I started it. The last sort of 2 years, it's interesting because when I started it, I just didn't care. I just said whatever was in my head and I was quite happy to go on. And, you know, I didn't really think about it. And I think in the last maybe 2.5, 3 years, I've kind of, now I'm scared. Like, the internet's a scary place and you have to be so careful and everyone's telling you all these things you need to watch out for. But at the time, no, putting myself out there, it was never really for me. It was just, you know, I wanted to do something fun because my friends encouraged me and I wasn't too worried. I think not being afraid of failure also led to a lot more success because of that. It was far easier to grow it because it was nothing that I was afraid of, because I was never growing it for it to become anything more than just a fun place for me to hang out. The growth was just secondary.
And that right there is the secret. So if anybody's listening, you heard it here first.
I don't care. That's really not the secret. I think for me, it was more about, I think that for the secret thing, I think there was just, I was putting in the work because I was passionate. And it's such a cliche and everyone always says it and, you know, we roll our eyes. But the truth is, if you love doing something and you're passionate about it, and that's, and you're doing it for that reason, because it's something that you enjoy and it's something that brings you joy, and the rest of it is all secondary, then I think it's far, I don't want to say easier, but definitely far more fulfilling when you grow a little bit and you're not as concerned with that growth. You're really just doing something you love. Whereas I think if you become obsessed with numbers and you want to make it big and this is going to be my full-time job and I need to make money and I've got to get this and I've got to get that, then all of a sudden it's, you just add so much unnecessary pressure to the whole thing and you get so wrapped up in your head thinking about what it's supposed to look like and how it's supposed to be, that you don't just actually get the job done, you know?
Were you always into gaming, or was there like a game that changed your mind or changed your heart into this path?
So my family, my dad is a super nerd and he was always, you know, we didn't really have there was no sports in our house. He wasn't a sports fan. He built Meccano. That was his thing that he liked to do for fun. Most people don't even know what Meccano is. So there's that. He built Meccano and he was always on his computer, you know, and the internet came about and he immediately introduced us to the internet. I still remember being in what grade 7 was then called standard 5, and him, Hotmail had just come into existence and he showed me how to hack into people's Hotmail accounts. So, and I started school young. So I was 11 turning 12 in standard 5. And he taught me how to hack into people's Hotmail accounts. So basically what in those days, you weren't clever about your passwords. So most people made their passwords the answer to their security question. And he was like, look, if you know the person, it was like social engineering 101, but he was like, look, if you know the person, you know what their interests are, you can get into their email. And at no time did he say to me that this is wrong and you should probably respect people's privacy. But he was like, you know, do you know when they're born? Yes, they're born on this date. Puts it in. And then he was like, well, look, now use that as the password. And it worked. It turns out most people back in the day used their security question as their password. So like, I'll never forget this kid in school. I was a bit of a nerd. I was a bit of an outcast, like super popular kid in school. His favorite sport was wakeboarding. And the security question on his Hotmail was wakeboarding. And then I used that as the password in the group and I broke into his account. But I remember I'm not even breaking in. Like now I've just got access. So they don't even know I've got in. And I was reading his emails and I found out about a girl he likes. Of course, super nerd who has no concept of social etiquette goes to school the next day and proceeds to tell everyone that Calvin likes so-and-so. And then they asked me how I know. I said, oh, because it's in his emails to Matthew, the other popular boy. And to this day, I mean, now I know why, but like standard five, standard six was a rough time. No one really wanted to be my friend. I wonder why. I mean, I haven't answered your question about gaming, but it gives you an idea of the kind of family, you know, at no point did anyone, like it was cool. Like I think my dad was kind of proud. Like my 11, 12 year old daughter can break into people's emails, you know, like look at her. People didn't even have the internet at home and I was doing that, but he was always playing games. My brother was always playing games. We were always allowed to play games. It wasn't something that was ever like, you know, frowned upon. We didn't have consoles, we always played on PC. We had a Sega, but then I mean the rest of the time we were on PC. My dad played Doom, Lara Croft, Diablo, Quake. I remember all of that. So we were always allowed to sort of jump in and play. He left us to our own devices it was Command and Conquer, we could do whatever we wanted on there. Age of Empires, you know, you could go mad. The Sims, like we were always just, he would always, if there was a game, we could play it. And he was very quick. I remember with Mortal Kombat, that was the one that I mean, if there was a game that stood up, that was the big one for me, was Mortal Kombat 3. And him being like, oh, you know, you can use the internet. Now, this is before the time of Google, where he's like, you can use the internet to get cheat codes and you can do cool things in the game. And I was like, well, how do I do that? And he was like, well, figure it out. And I mean, that was the thing. He was like, figure it out and just leave you on the computer to do whatever you want. Like, I read all these articles now about parents controlling screen time and watching what your kids do online. My dad just let us do whatever we wanted. We were on the internet when it was like, it was the wild west at the time, but we could go mad. So like, I remember going on the internet, finding all the Mortal Kombat codes so that I could do baby fatalities and downloading these weird mods to The Sims so that I could have all the Spice Girls in The Sims. I mean, that was the type of stuff we were doing. So I think gaming was always part of it. When I got to high school, I was a bit of an outcast and I kind of withdrew a bit from it. By that point as well, my brother got really good at Dota and other games, and in my family, everyone's super competitive. So it became difficult because I'm not like them. They can pick up any game and off they go and they're just good. Like they pick up a controller and it takes 2 minutes and they can both figure it out. I wasn't like that. It takes me a long time. Even now, I have to sit and kind of, you know, figure it out for the first 20 minutes on my, like if I'm playing on my Nintendo Switch, playing a new game, it takes me like 20 minutes just to figure out how everything works. And because of that, they were very quick to sort of, because like I said, super competitive, and my brother ended up in esports, but it was very much a matter of like, well, get wrecked, you know. So then I kind of withdrew because in my mind as well, I was like, oh, I'm a girl and I suck. So I was still playing games, but it was very much not something that I spoke about or promoted. And even when I started the blog, I was very scared about talking about games, but video games have always been there. They've always played a role in our lives. My brother, like I said, played competitive Dota before it was cool to be an esports player. He did that for years, so it was just always something that was there and encouraged, and we were always encouraged to explore gaming and technology. It was just a thing that existed in our house.
Okay, so I know that you described what being in high school was like for you, and well, basically being a kid at home, but what does a typical day in the life of tech girl look like today?
It depends which day. So like today it was I played games till like 1 a.m. for some absurd reason. Woke up at like 10 to 7 and was like, this isn't gonna work for me. Went back to sleep, finally rolled out of bed at 9 a.m. because I actually had work to do. Sat in my pajamas till 12, realized I had to do a live stream at 1 and could not do that in my pajamas. Actually, not even, do you know that I went to go look in the mirror at 12 to decide if I could get away with doing it in my pajamas, but realized I couldn't, got dressed. Yeah, streamed, did some more work after that behind my PC. Doing this interview, then we'll go and shower and be a normal human. That's some days. Other days are insane. So like that was today, but on Tuesday, to give you an idea, I woke up at 10 to 7 because I needed to get a Red Bull article finished and submitted to see if they wanted to use it. So I woke up at 10 to 7, was on my PC at 7, finished the article. I'd kind of done most of it, so quickly just finished it up, sent it out at 7:15, had some coffee and some breakfast, got back behind my computer at 8 o'clock to get a bunch of blog posts up, answer emails, you know, do the admin side of it, jumped in the shower, And then had to head to a studio because I was filming something for Red Bull. So I was in studio then. So then you arrive and kind of sit around and wait for everyone to get ready. Then got filmed on Red Bull, jumped in my car on my way home with a hands-free kit, did a meeting. I had a business meeting that I had to do, so did the meeting hands-free in my car, got home, and then very quickly ate something, jumped back behind my PC, tried to answer as many emails as I could, and was in on an interview at 5 o'clock and ready to go. And that was kind of, I actually, straight after that at 6 o'clock, ran to eat some more food, made a mistake and thought it was Wednesday and thought I had another thing I had to do at 7, which I didn't, thank goodness. So then had a bath and was playing games. But I mean, some days look like that. Other days I'm in my pajamas till 12 o'clock. So it's always fun being your own boss because I think you kind of dictate that speed. So it really depends. But when I'm doing an esports live show and I'm going to have to be live in studio, those are normally the most chaotic.
So can I ask you, so you were just talking about doing like live esports shows now, and you have a pretty hectic life, if I might say so. But I could relate to gaming till 1 a.m. and then waking up the next morning and not knowing what day it is. But just a quick one. So you started off Tekkle when like Twitter wasn't really around and blogging wasn't a thing. And now you're kind of like the face of esports. What are some of the changes you've seen in South African esports over the years?
Well, I mean, I think before even Tekkle existed, when my brother was playing, everything happened in the basements of Rage, which was obviously Rage is that big gaming expo that happens here. Everyone knows Rage. Yeah. There was esports there for years downstairs in the basement. That's where it happened. So DGL was always, Telkom DGL was downstairs. So many kids down there, my brother included, all down there playing, and no one ever paid attention. I'd go down every year to see my brother, but there was just no one there, which was always weird. So obviously the change, the first big change I saw was the fact that they got upstairs and were actually in the convention with everyone else. That was very exciting. And then obviously all the big money came, you know, all the glitz and the glam and the flash and the throwing money. More people got vocal online. I think it's become, it's such a controversial thing to say, I'll probably get into trouble for it, but I think it's become far less community-based though, you know? For me, esports was always just a small, like it was a group of players and people that were passionate about the scene, just desperately trying to take it further. And everyone was kind of, you know, there was drama behind the scenes, but nothing super serious. Everyone was just trying to do what they could and trying to support people that were doing what they could. And then obviously when money comes in, all of that goes out the window, right? So I think it's a lot less community orientated these days, which is a pity because it actually needs that to grow. It's not really as big as it needs to be in South Africa. But I do think that the community aspect is, that's one of the changes I've noticed. Obviously, there's a level of professionalism that's come in. It's got far more bigger. It's got a lot more attention. People are a lot more professional. The level of gameplay has blown up. But the community, sadly, when things get bigger, I suppose the community aspect dies a little bit. So I miss that.
Okay, I wasn't around when it started, but I think that for now there is some niches that have developed in the gaming industry where there are communities that are growing and thriving, but not on a, I wouldn't say a top tier professional level, but there are guys that do play, and personally I've met like guys from all over South Africa that I wouldn't have normally met if I wasn't gaming with them. And I think that's pretty cool to be able to do that and to have that, because normally I wouldn't be playing with a bunch of Boers and trying to figure out which Afrikaans word means what. But
I think that this is my thing. As much as I say, I think that when I say the community aspect's missing, I'm talking more from like that top tier, you know, professional big name titles thing. But I think it's so important, if you look at the history of esports around the world, how it started with small communities just doing their thing, you know, making plans to play against each other. And there was a passion driving. And I think that there is a community aspect, like there's other titles, and not just other titles, but there are these pockets of people doing cool things. So for example, I mean, like I recently got into Siege. I think it was about 3-4 months ago. I've already got like 140 hours in the game. I'm obsessed. I play it every night. I don't want to be competitive. I'm not interested in working, and it's just my fun thing. But I have like this tiny community of people that I'm now playing Siege with, who have become some of my closest friends because we're together every night playing this game. So I do think that community aspect's there. I worry when we now move into the professional space, because there's money on the line, it's a lot more serious. So that fun side is gone. You know, it's not like it used to be where you were like, hey guys, should we like set up this random LAN in the basement at Rage and like, you know, we'll just jam and there's no fun, there's no prize money. But also my friend says that he can cast it, so that'll be cool. And he's casting it just for the people that are hanging around there, which are the girlfriends, you know. That for me was like, I do miss that a little bit. I think it still exists, but I do think it's missing from those bigger events, which I don't think it's going to come back. I think there's a different vibe now where it's like super competitive and exciting, and that professionalism is really cool. So I'm not necessarily saying we need to kill that and that needs to come back. It's just an interesting change that develops in certain titles. Yeah. So, I mean, I think from a casual point of view, there's definitely so many more gamers now though, which I really love. There's far more people playing games online. There's far more South Africans who are jumping into to service. Some of them are not so great, as we know. Hashtag CODZA. But for the rest of them, you know, for the majority of it, it's cool. It's cool to see so many people playing.
So you guys started off in like a small community-based sort of environment and now going into these huge arenas worldwide. What's the kind of vibe behind the scenes? Is it all serious and rigid and... Or can you go up to someone and be like, hey, you want to take a quick picture for the gram? is that happening behind the scenes or no?
Depends who you are. I mean, if you're me, you just make a fool out of yourself. I mean, so obviously I'm in a unique position where I work here and then I work overseas. Going overseas is very different. It is very professional. There's people that specialize as observers. That's their only job. They're paid, they travel the world, they just observe Overwatch and they don't do other games, you know, or just PUBG. There's the studios are, it's like a full-on professional live sports broadcast. So when you get there, you know, you've got a sound guy, you've got a lighting guy, you've got a professional makeup artist, you know, like it's the super pro vibe. There's an understanding that everyone's there to get a job done, and you're expected if you arrive, if you're on that set, that you know that you have to get that job done. So you can't walk in and be like, I don't really know what's going on. You know, you've got to walk in there and know your shit, for want of a better term. But I think everyone's still, I mean, the best people I've met have been on those sets because it's super high pressure and you're really stressed, so you get really close really fast. There's a level of trust that comes into it. The moment you walk in there in that sort of environment, especially for a live show where you've got a lot of people watching, which tends to happen in overseas esports, is that like the moment you walk in there, you have to trust the people that are in there with you. You got to know that they know how to do their jobs. You got to know that lighting guy knows that he knows how to make you look good, you know, and things like that. There's kind of this weird seating that immediately breaks where you all just kind of, you move on to like being super close very quickly because you have to be, you have to rely on one another. But in terms of like being super, I've done this so many times where like I walk in and I try to be cool. So, you know, you arrive for rehearsal and I'm just sitting down. I'm like, this is cool. It takes me like 30 seconds and I'm like, oh my God, I'm your biggest fan. Like it happened to me with Kolaris, James from, he was on PUBG. And Kolaris obviously said StarCraft. He's just phenomenal. And I walked in and within 10 seconds, he was actually, this wasn't even on set. He was at the hotel sitting in the lobby because he wanted to check in. So he's just had a flight. I've just flown to Germany from South Africa. So overnight flight, not looking my best. No one looks their best when they get off a flight like that. I've now, probably not smelling my best either. I need to now also wait for my room. And I walk into the lobby and I see him sitting on his laptop. And I'm like, you can be cool. You know, you can say, hi, James, because we'd obviously been chatting. We knew we were working on this gig. So, hi, James, I'm Sam. We're working together. Nice to meet you, Sam. Sorry, I've just got off a flight, so we'll chat later. Yes, thank you. You know, no, not Sam. I was like, oh my God, Kolaris. Oh my God, I'm so excited. My name's Sam. We're going to be working together. This is the best ever. Can I sit down? Do you want a coffee? This is so exciting. I just want to ask you all the questions. And he was kind of like, okay. He was great after that. He chatted to me, but that was what happened. I was like, I'm just the biggest fan. I'm so excited to work with you. Please can you just like, oh my gosh, I'm going to ask you this and I'm going to ask you that and tell me about this experience. And then I didn't stop chatting, I think for 2 hours. So he was busy playing, I think he was playing WoW at the time, waiting for his room. And he ended up shutting his computer down and just sitting there talking to me because I could not stop talking while we waited for 2 hours for our rooms to be ready. So I do the ridiculous fan goal, and I don't think that'll ever change and I'm okay with it. Lots of people tell me it's not professional, but I don't care. I think that that's the best part about our jobs is we get to meet these amazing people who we've seen on TV and things like that. So, and they're talented, and I think that we should celebrate that, even if it freaks them out slightly. That's okay.
I completely agree. But what would you say was your favorite and most memorable moment working in an esports event overseas?
I think there's so many. I don't want to say that there's like one specific moment. I think that there's like a few. For me, the big one was last year working in PUBG Europe League, which was technically my first what they call tier one event. So obviously esports overseas has different tiers. So tier one is like best of the best players in that title, best of the best commentary team, you know, like biggest prize money, tier one type of thing. And that was my first tier one event, which was PUBG Europe League. And I think walking in there, they had this giant hangar that they'd put all the teams on these stairs on either side of the hangar. And then they had this runway and they'd fly an AI plane over it at the start of the show. That was a really big one for me, I think. Definitely PUBG Europe League, just because I just never saw that happening during a tier one event. For me, I got into esports and I love it, but I never really felt like being so far away, living in South Africa, that tier one was an option. So being on a tier one event was cool, but definitely my first one as well, first overseas event, which was working an ESL stage at Gamescom. So I got to go to Gamescom and then I got to go there and then I got to work a stage, and it was my first international event. I had a nervous breakdown along the way because when I landed, they'd lost my bag. So I didn't have any of my clothes. I made a deal to book my own hotel and made a mistake. So I was so far away from the venue. So many mistakes that happened, but in the end, also, like I said, you walk into these big events and everyone is like, bro, they know what they're doing. And I remember with the ESL one, which was now 4 years ago, walked into the green room and sitting there on the couch was Pansy, who is a CSGO shoutcaster and probably one of my idols. She was just sitting there and I was like, oh my God, this is Pansy. So I didn't fangirl at that point because there was a room full of people.
I was half expecting there to be a story like that.
No fangirl. I just sat down in absolute silence. I didn't talk to anyone. It was a professional makeup artist, which I didn't even know existed. So that was terrifying for me. And I'd done all my own makeup because I didn't realize I was getting a professional artist. And I sat down and just looked around and was like, whatever you do, don't tell anyone, you don't know what you're doing yet. That was what I said in my head. So it was quite scary because I had no clue. I'd never worked with in-ears. I didn't know what an in-ear was. I didn't know that the producer was going to speak to me in my ears because I hadn't done that before in South Africa. And I faked a lot that weekend. And it was so funny because years later, Pansy came to South Africa and I saw her again and I told her the story and we were laughing because she was still like, I still remember you. She was like, you were like a mute. You just sat in the corner, didn't speak. I was like, yes, that was me. And we've now worked together on PEL as well. And it's always like a standing joke because that when she met me, I was terrified of her. So I think that was maybe one of the other big memories because I just think that was the first time, you know?
You dropped a few names there and last before week, I think, Ash, we had Alwyn Switchventer on our show. And we were just telling him that we're in talks to get you on for a special episode. And he sang your praises. But I want to find out, does everyone know everyone in the industry, in the esports industry?
I love Alvin. It is a very small industry. So I think a lot of people do know each other. But then I also think that there's so many bubbles of it that we don't know. I love finding the new bubbles and finding the new stories. That's my favorite thing. So I like the moments I realize I don't really know the community, I'll try to jump in and find out more about them and find the stories that are there because that's an interest of mine. I think that there is a very small group that knows each other. I've chatted, interestingly enough, I've started chatting to people in the community and like a lot of them have this perception that it's quite a clicky space where they're like, oh, there's this bubble and you can't get in, which kind of shocked me because I was like, oh, I don't think so. And then I thought back to when I started and I was like, oh, wait. No, I remember feeling the same. So I do think that there is a matter of everyone. There's a group of people that have played games together for a long time, worked together for a long time, know each other very well. So it is a little bit difficult to break in there, but I definitely don't think everybody knows everyone else. Just this week, I got educated on the Battlefield community. So that's something I want to learn more about, something I didn't know. And now I've heard that it's like this really active community and I want to jump in there and find out more. And I think that's what's so exciting about what we do is competitive gaming and gaming in general. There's so many titles and there's so many different people and you can just go and find out all these stories and find these people and you almost immediately have a connection because you have a common interest in games. And then that connection gets even stronger when it's a common interest in a game you both love.
Yeah, it is. And back to Battlefield. Shout out to DPS and the boys. I know that there is a revival going on, if I can call it that. So if anybody does have Battlefield 5 on PS4, we still play on some African servers, and we do have it back because there was an issue about 2 months ago where the community manager tweeted out and said that African servers are going to be removed from the game. And I think there was some people that decided to troll him on Twitter. But I think it worked because we do have it back and we have been playing. And recently there's been a game mode called Gun Game Nights. So basically what happens is that everyone plays with a particular weapon for the entire round. So it does get very fun. Yeah, I think that there are people who have been playing with each other for a while now, because I only found out about the clans about a year ago, and they have been playing the previous titles and stuff like that. So it's very cool. It is very fun. And yeah, I think I shall introduce you to a couple of people, and you can check it out from the boots on ground level.
Do it. I'm keen.
Sam, you obviously have a huge following on your social media, both young and old people. I just want to find out, like, what advice do you have for people who are trying to get into the esports industry as a career, or just starting off and wanting to get somewhere within the industry?
So I think that the first thing is, this is something that I see all the time, right, is that people are like, okay, cool. And I get it a lot where they're like, right, I want to be a professional gamer. I want to make lots of money. Or, okay, I want to be a shoutcaster now. I want to get paid. I also want to go overseas. I'm going to be a content creator and I want to stream full time. And I think that the problem now is that people are coming in and they're looking at that going, I want that. I want what you perceive to be glitz and glam and whatever else. And that's what I want. And it's a problem because, one, much like any other professional sports, for every 7,000 football players, there's maybe one that makes it to sort of a tier
top
four.
Level.
Not even a top level, you know, like maybe like a tier two
second
type
division
level.
Second division or third division, yeah.
Exactly. So that's the first thing, is like have a little bit of understanding that not everyone makes it into the big time. Also understand that the South African scene is still so new in where it is and developing, and I don't think there's a lot of people that are making a living from it right now. So that's the first thing, is understanding that. Understanding the fact that, like, again, whether it's you want to be a shoutcaster or you want to be a full-time Twitch streamer, for every 50,000 Twitch streamers, there's only one ninja, you know? So I think that, like, my advice would be get into this industry for the right reasons. And those reasons need to be because you love gaming or esports, that you're passionate, you want to do a skill that you can improve on, and you want to improve on it for you, not for anyone else, not for the money, not for the fame, for you. And understand what it is you want to do and what you want to achieve. And it needs to be more of a focus of what I think that the material stuff has to go out the window, and you need to look and decide what it is that, like, the legacy you want to leave, even if that legacy is just for you. So my advice would be, first off, get into it for the right reasons. And then the second thing is, so, you know, like, I always hear this, and I hate it so much, that saying, you know, work smart, not hard. And I'm like, I cannot stand it, because I just don't believe it. I think that the truth of it is you have to work hard. I had to learn the hard way when I came in here. Like, I had to put in a lot of hours. I had to do a lot of research myself. No one's handing out, you know, reference material for you. You have to go and figure out and learn. And I had to do a lot of that, which was really tough. Like, it meant, like, a lot of time that I could have spent playing games was spent on Google trying to learn, you know, microphone technique and things like that. So I kind of feel like that whole thing of work smart, just what people tell you in the marketing, people try to tell you when they're trying to sell you something. You're going to have to work hard. And if you're not willing to put in the grind, and you think that when you walk in, people are just going to give you all the tools you need, then you're not going to make it. So yeah, I think my advice would be come in for the right reasons and be prepared to graft.
I think that when it comes to success on any level, there's some mysticism that goes on where people try to dismiss the boring things that actually work, and they look for something that's special, something that requires something in particular that they feel they cannot get to right now. And I think the marketing gurus have done a good job in introducing that idea. And when it comes to gaming, I described it as a sort of a career that was what being a rock star was a few generations back, because everybody wants to get into it and people want to make money immediately. They want to have the cars, they want to have the setups, they want to have the hair like ninja, and
yes, you're so right.
It doesn't like the core of being a gamer to play and enjoy it and have fun and grow a community and be consistent in your content and be consistent in, well, in your personality, because brands are basically personalities now. And just to do that will take someone a lot further than trying to research how to do one thing that isn't really something that's major to your success.
For sure. And I think also the like you mentioned, those marketing gurus who've touted this for so long, they had a trending YouTube video back in like 2007 when you could trend on YouTube organically. Yeah. So I'm always just like, you know, their giant follower base came from that. Like, and that was just like, so don't believe the hype. It is like, it's a tough one because a lot of people disagree with me and say, well, you shouldn't, you know, there's people that have worked hard their entire lives and never really got what they wanted. But I think if you love gaming and you love playing games and you love creating content around games, it'll be hard and it'll feel hard, but it won't matter. I think if your heart's not in the right place, then you might feel it more than others.
Completely agree.
Yep. You spoke about like you had to learn it the hard way, and like Ash was saying just now that like your brand is your personality. In this case, you are Tech Girl. So what was like some of the challenges you were facing when you were kind of starting off?
I mean, I'm the wrong gender, right? That was the first thing. Well, it depends who you ask, actually. So some people will tell you that the only reason that Tech Girl was able to sort of become a sustainable brand was because of my gender. I'd like to argue that it was a hindrance to a point. That was a really big hurdle to overcome, was being a woman in this space. I'm not naive to the fact that certainly when I started and I was absolutely rubbish at what I was doing, a lot of the jobs that I got were because they needed to fill a quota. And I'm not naive to that. I'm well aware that I wasn't good enough, and I kind of got plonked into certain roles because they needed to tick a box that said they had a girl on broadcast. But it also made it much tougher because I would walk into, and this never happened overseas, ironically. So none of my overseas jobs, this ever happened, but definitely here in South Africa, where I was aware that certain opportunities were given to me over other people who were possibly more deserving or more experienced because they needed to tick that box. But it was tougher because when it walked in, it meant that I had to be shit hot, because if I wasn't, you know, that was even worse for me. So I really needed to like up my game. And I found that quite difficult in the beginning, was that I had to be on such a different level and know so much more than my colleagues who maybe had more experience than what you would normally lean on. You know, in a healthy work environment, you'd lean on those colleagues and they would help the new person. But that wasn't the case because everyone was really angry that I was there to begin with. So not everyone, but certain people. So that was really tough for me. And I had to put up with a lot of nasty comments, nastiness and like just sexism. And it didn't really, interestingly enough, didn't happen with the community at large. It didn't happen with people watching esports or people playing. It predominantly happened with other people working in the scene who just were horrible. They made my life hell. So I think that was, for me, was the biggest hurdle to overcome, was dealing with that. And then also I think learning how to use my platform. So obviously now it's a different struggle. That was the first struggle coming in, but like it's a different struggle now where mentally it can be extremely draining. I made a call. I used to be very loud spoken about everything. Like if I had an opinion, everyone knew exactly what it was and where I stood, and I would fight for it till the bitter end. I'd always admit when I was wrong. I'm happy to step back and admit when I'm wrong. But if I believe in something strongly, I'm going to be super loud and vocal. That's how I am in real life. And I was doing that online. And I think I became very aware the last 2 years to shut up, which sounds absurd, but it was very much a matter of, I just couldn't take it anymore. Cause I felt like every time I spoke up on something important, I just get attacked, you know, and not necessarily on social media where everyone could see it, but like privately via messages of people telling me, don't say that, don't do that, you're wrong to do that. Then I felt like a lot of other stuff started coming up, you know, it was physical appearance and things. And this is all like what's happening within the industry itself with your colleagues, where it's like, oh, you probably shouldn't dress like that, or maybe you need to lose some weight, or maybe you need to do that. And like that becomes really, really difficult. And I think
that's a bit harsh.
It is harsh. And the thing is that no one's doing it to guys. Like, it drives me mad. But that was all happening. And then I kind of said, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just take a step back. I'm not going to talk up anymore. Like, I'm going to stay in my lane. I'm going to stop doing this. Like, it's wrong. You can't jump in and just shout out what you're thinking. And if you see a greater injustice in the world, you can't just back off now. Like, it's not real life. Just back off. So I backed off and I've not been saying anything. And then in the last few months, I'm starting to get criticized. So the same people that spent a very long time telling me to stay in my lane and shut up, now that I'm staying in my lane and shutting up, are very quick to be like, well, you're not using your platform for good. You're not talking up about these things. Where are you? And you're kind of like, I can't win. So I think to go back to your question, I think that the biggest hurdle coming in and still being here is trying to understand where my voice fits in. And when I say my voice, I'm talking about someone who is female, you know, and isn't the norm. And I think that the same applies to if we see anyone from the LGBTQ community come in. It's the same thing. They don't quite understand where their voice fits in. You know, if you're a person of color when you're coming into the scene, because these smaller groups, if you like, we don't have a space. We're trying to make space. So it becomes very difficult to understand how you do that and how to fit in. And I think that was my biggest hurdle for me, was just trying to figure out how to get in. And then also having thick enough skin to stay in, because I think that was a tough one. This is a very deep answer to your question. Should have just been like, oh, you know, I needed a new PC. Like, I don't know.
No, we honestly appreciate the honesty and the genuine answers. And I'm sure I speak for Mav and I when I say that we are genuinely glad that you decided to pursue the career and even play with Legos on Instagram stories.
Did you see that recently? I'm like a child. You know, sometimes my mom is just like, what are you going to do? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, you cannot keep doing this. And I'll be like, well, what do you mean I can't keep doing this? And she was like, you have to like be an adult at some point. And I was just like, no, that's a lie. I don't want to. Like, she's just like, my mom does not believe I have a real job. Like, I actually think that she thinks that I'm secretly going into an office every day, because there's absolutely no way that this is what I do.
Mom, if you're listening, it is real.
It's real, Mom, I swear.
Yeah, I'm for one really glad that you're in this space. I'm a huge fan of yours. I don't think that is coming across quite clearly in this podcast, but I've been a huge fan of yours for a long time. I've been following you on Facebook, and I recently saw that you are in DC fandom, and I was like, no way. So what are you, is Warner Bros. Making a Wonder Woman and you're starring in it? Is that the case?
I mean, yeah, that's obviously what's going to happen. No, if only I could, you know, act, run, memorize lines. But I think we should start a petition though. Gal Gadot must go.
Let's do it.
I can already see the poster.
Oh, well, I mean, we could do this, but I feel like Gal Gadot has a lot more of a following and they'll probably not be happy about this. But yeah, I was very lucky, obviously, with lockdown. When COVID hit me, affected me a lot earlier than I think most people, because a lot of European work was getting cancelled, but nothing had happened in South Africa. And yep. I was aware that there was like this weird darkness coming, and I started getting stressed because, you know, last year the majority of my income and work came from overseas. And I was kind of figuring out that this was going on overseas and they were starting to shut down these events. And I thought, what am I going to do? Because how am I going to make money? I'm a freelancer. How am I going to pay rent? You know, I sort of bank on these jobs. And then realized that COVID, when it got here and it started spreading, was like, well, now I can't go get a desk job because there isn't going to be a desk job, because obviously this is now becoming a huge thing. So I was in a very dark place when level 5 hits, to be honest. And then I was just really lucky, because I think being in the gaming space, live streaming, you know, creating content, meant that some new people popped up and said, oh, you know, you can film things from home. And this is, you know, there's a way for us to work with you, and you understand this and whatever. And started doing a lot more of that stuff. And then out of the blue, found out that there was a space for me in DC fandom, which was so cool. And I had a super nerdy moment with that. Like, agreed. I had, you know, they talk about imposter syndrome.
yes, of course.
I had full on imposter syndrome. When they asked me if I wanted to do DC fandom, I had like, I said yes, I signed the contract, and then for about 3 nights was like, what have you done? You are playing way out of your space now. But it's been so cool, and I'm so excited for everyone to see what's on offer. I think it's such a great idea, understanding that people can't travel to conventions and not going to be able to move around. I think what Warner Brothers and DC have done is so exciting, because it is going to be this entire massive online event, which everyone can jump in, everyone can watch for free, everyone can be involved. I think they've now split it into two, just because there was so much. Was going to be a full 24 hours of like just stacks of stuff. They've realized that there's just no way you can get through all of it. So They're going to be doing their Hall of Heroes on the 22nd of August. And that's going to be this giant show with all new announcements around movies and TV shows and games and just like tons of like special panels and interactive stuff that you can do with your favorite DC stars. And then in September, another one, which is basically all of that on steroids again. So it's going to be really exciting.
I'm really excited to see you there. I'm just going to be texting and saying, I know this girl. And I'm emailing you and saying, I'm so proud to see you on the Hall of Heroes. That's going to be so exciting. But can you tell us, like, what are you doing there? Are you announcing something or is everything like super sealed up?
I'm hanging out with some friends and some we're talking about our favorite DC stuff. And that's all I'm allowed to say.
No, I guess I'll just wait and I'll stay up and watch every single part of it. I'm a huge fan of DC, so I'm pretty excited for that. But we do have a game that we would like to play with you very quickly before we let you go. Ash, do you want to explain?
I'm so scared of games. I've done this before. I did this once before and the game, I got really nervous because I told you earlier in my house, like everyone wanted to win, they play games. I never did, but I feel the same way. So I was like, I'm really scared. I did a game once before and I mistook the start of a PlayStation starting up for a MacBook. And I've felt ashamed about that ever since. So is this going to be a hard game? Can I lose this game?
No, not at all. Ash will explain the rules, but it's a super fun, simple game. I think you'll actually enjoy it.
The only way you can lose is if you don't play.
Okay, then I'm fine.
So that's out of the way. Basically, this is called the new brush, and it's going to be a game where I say five phrases and Matt says five phrases, and you are going to tell us the first thing that pops into your head.
Okay, cool. Are you ready? It's dangerous because I know what sometimes pops into my head, but let's go.
Okay. First game ever.
First game ever was Mortal Kombat 3. It probably wasn't the first game ever, but it was Mortal Kombat 3 was probably the first one that I remember playing lots of.
Okay, now this isn't part of the five questions, but how many times have you done the finish him line?
Finish him line. Oh, yeah, but I mean, I say that all the time. I'm a little bit of a weirdo. Finish him. And then you know my favorite thing in Mortal Kombat 3 was? So, like, the finish him thing is... Also, sometimes you say that line in front of people that don't get it, hey? Like, I realize sometimes I'll be like, finish him, and then they'll just look at you and you're like, never mind. My favorite thing growing up was... This is so stupid. Sindel was in Mortal Kombat 3, so she's actually my favorite Mortal Kombat character to play with. And she had that long skunk hair, so she had the black and white long, long hair. And one of the things you could do with her is you could run, and she would throw her head and grab someone with her hair, and it would wrap around, and then she'd throw them from side to side. And I don't know if you remember that, but I got so upset, unreasonably upset, when that I whipped my hair back and forth song came out, because I was just like... No, like you cannot claim this, Will Smith's little child. Like, this is not yours. This was Sindel's, and no one appreciates Sindel. I feel like she was a very important part of Mortal Kombat that everyone just brushes over, and now you've stolen that as well. So yeah, it was like a weird little argument I had in my own head that I've actually never vocalized until now. And now that I've vocalized it, I've realized how stupid it is. So we'll never discuss that again.
Oh, really? I was just about to start a petition, get a hashtag going.
Bring Sindel back. Every Mortal Kombat, I'm like, this is the year that Sindel is in the lineup. And then she's always like a DLC.
Okay, devs, if you're listening.
Yeah. Stop bringing her in as a DLC. She should be on the starting lineup, damn it. Anyway. Just for okay. me.
Moving on. Call of Duty update sizes.
Must go away. That's the first thing that came into my mind. I'm going to finish your sentences. Must go away. Come on, guys.
Okay. Virtual reality.
Beat Saber. That was the first thing that came into my mind. Beat Saber. I love that game so much. So much fun. I do actually have a VR headset for my PlayStation which I'm not allowed to set up in the lounge because the people I live with have seen me play on VR before and are scared about what I'll break. But I do feel like if I had the opportunity, I could just play Beat Saber for hours and hours and hours. I love that game.
Do you remember the teaser trailer for it and the soundtrack?
I don't remember the teaser trailer. I remember the original songs when it started out that you could play with. Do I need to go Google the teaser trailer? Is that what you're telling me? Okay, cool. That's the first thing I'm doing when we're done.
Hopefully it is the same thing. Okay. Gold gamers?
So the first thing that came to mind was stereotypes. Okay. Which is not fair because, I mean, I think it's just a matter of conversation that we've been having this last month because of Women's Month. So it's just that thing of like, I'm starting to realize that there's a very specific idea that everyone has in their head of what a girl gamer needs to look like and speak like and sound like and behave like and dress like. So the first thing that came into my mind was stereotypes, which is maybe a bit of a negative one and unfair. But yeah, I'm having this like really weird discussion with a lot of my friends who are girls who play games about the kind of the weird stereotypes that we all have to like sort of fight, you know, and face.
Yep. The things that goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's a much deeper conversation, right? So like it's that idea of, it's so weird. Now I'm just going to go on a complete segue in the middle of this game. I had the weirdest conversation with someone the other day who said, you know, if you get upset with people, like girl gamers get a lot of, they get a lot of sort of toxicity in chat and stuff. They're like, you just need to go wreck the people afterwards. And I was like, yes, but also not all people are like, not all people deal with conflict that way, you know? So some people deal with conflict where they get that negativity and they're just like, oh yeah, I'll just, you know, I'm going to just show you. Other people completely introvert into themselves. And yeah, this is a whole other conversation. So I'm going to have to come back for another podcast before I ruin this game, which I desperately want to win. So let's keep going.
I'd love to have that conversation. I think that having the conversation would be something that needs to be done, and would love to have your perspective and thoughts on that. Okay, so next one. Favorite game of all time? Just the easy ones, you know.
Oh, this is like a stab in the heart. Oh, no! No! I wanted to say Mortal Kombat 3 just because it's like the fondest memory type of thing, and it was the first one. But I actually think, maybe Overwatch. Overwatch. I don't even play it anymore, to be honest, but it's there. Something special about Overwatch for a variety of personal reasons. Oh, this is horrible. I don't like this. No! You can't make me choose, damn it!
Okay, Mav, I'm going to slide it on to you.
Just pass it. Yeah, it's fine. We forgive you. It's all good. Okay. I think mine is a little bit easy, but let's see. Okay. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Umbrella Academy Season 2.
Absolute best. Number 5.
Agreed. Ellie from The Last of Us 2.
Ooh, real. That's the first thing that
real
comes to mind.
Real. Can I ask why?
So it's a controversial opinion, I know, for a lot of people, but I think that the way Ellie behaved in The Last of Us 2 was, I found that very relatable. I found her more real than, so I know a lot of people don't agree with me. I think she was more real than most characters. I think that the way she behaved is indicative of humans. I don't want to spoil the ending for someone who hasn't played it, but yes. I think the way it ended was just horrible, but such an indication of the path we all take ourselves down, and the path that she took herself down. She completely got herself there all on her own with her actions and the way she chose to handle things. And I just found it very real, which I know is controversial because I know a lot of other people don't feel that way, but I thought she was, I thought whoever wrote the writers for The Last of Us 2, for me, there's a couple of issues that I have, but in terms of like the human side of it, I just thought that they nailed it. I thought that they just got it. They've perfectly encapsulated, excuse my language, with the shittiness of humans and how we inherently all are if we don't take a step back and question our behavior the way we tend to behave. So yeah, real for me. But I know not everyone agrees with me. So I'll take the hate that comes my way. I know not everyone feels this way, but that game, for me, I was like, the angrier you were when you finished it, the more you need to realize that they did such a great job, because it's easy to make people feel happy, and to make people laugh, it's really hard to make people just be miserable, you know? So yeah, when you write stuff like that.
That game is just a roller coaster of emotions for me.
That's hard. Like, the art of it, outside of the game, the art of getting that right, it's just... I saw a streamer break his disc when he finished.
I saw that.
Disc and broke it, and I was like, this game is horrible. And I was like, is it? Look what they made you feel. You know how hard it is to make someone feel like that from a video game. Like, that's amazing. Anyway, I mean, but that's my opinion.
Okay.
Not pass. Everyone agrees
definitely.
With me.
No, that's a pass. That's a pass for us. Snyder Cut.
I want to see it.
Okay. Okay, same. DC fandom.
Hype. I'm so excited for this. I'm very excited. Hype. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay, last one. Nubology.
I love it. This has been so much fun. This really has. We've had a lot of conversations off air as well.
Yes.
And it's just been tons of fun chatting to you guys. And I love what you're doing here. So I'm just excited. I do want to come back. I mean,
please,
I dropped the hints.
After fandom, we would love to have you back. Come on.
I dropped the hints. Did you see I dropped it already. I took this is how you do it. You know what I mean? You build. I learned this from those marketing gurus we were talking about. You know, drop the hints, play the long game. I'd love to come back.
Please,
did I pass the game, though?
Did I
win?
Dash, your side? Is it a win?
Yeah, definitely. I would give you... Okay, so normally my maths is just like completely bonkers. So I would give you a 100 out of 10.
I'll take it. Honest. Yes, I'm a winner. I love what you guys are doing. I think it's really cool. And I just wish we had more of this in South Africa. I think these are such important conversations to have, and they're entertaining and they're really fun. And it was an honor to be on Nubology. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
It is more than a pleasure. And now I'm your biggest fan, and I'm going to go and find you all on Instagram and Twitter, and I'm never going to leave you alone. We're going to chat about The Last of Us Part 2 till you lose your mind.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Nubology with our very special guest, Sam Tech Girl Wright. You can find her at TechGirlZA on all the social media platforms and follow her on her blog. Be sure to subscribe to Nubology on Apple iTunes, leave us a review, and check us out on Facebook. Cheers, guys.